I'm Bob Bazans. I'm an alcoholic. Sober through the grace of God in AA since the 10th of December 1967. For that, I'm very grateful. That would put me in the newcomer category in Florida. I'm looking out at my different friends that have some considerable amount of sobriety in excess of mine, but they also have quality. It is, and I was just in California over the weekend at an AA event, and I was at a meeting in Portland, Oregon, where I got to give a friend of mine a 40-year pin, and they had six men, five men and one woman, with over 50 years at a relatively small meeting of alcoholics. I thought that's cool. It is for a guy who came. I came in when I was 23, and I'm also from a very large family, and there were 21 of us cousins. Or no, I'm 16. And you always wanted to hang out with the older cousins. You wanted to be with the big guys. And when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to be with the big guys. I hung out with the old, just the back of the old timers, eavesdropping. And it's one of the saddest things for me is to watch the attrition of some of the people in AA. So it's always nice when I come someplace where people are long in sobriety and long in life and still active in their active in doing a good job in Alcoholics Anonymous. Pleased to be here this weekend with a lot of people who I admire, love. If I started recognizing them individually, I'd be here a long time, so I won't do that. But I am glad to be here. I was supposed to be at a family wedding this weekend. My brother has had four children this year that are getting married. And I am on my wife's list. For my wife is at the wedding, at the bridal dinner tomorrow night, at the wedding, and I am not at the wedding. And this has been noticed within my family, and for some reason, I really wanted to be here. I've been having a tough time this year, and I find when I'm with you, and I'm with you a lot, but I'm better when I'm with you. I just am. I know more about who I am when I'm in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous than I do any place else in my life. It is my grounding. I wanted to be here, so I'm here. I started drinking early. I started drinking when it first came out. I was 13 years old, which is a little late these days. And my mom had seven kids. I'm the second oldest, and she sent the older ones to school early. So I was 4'11" when I went to high school. Military academy, had a tough time finding a uniform small enough, you know, the cap down almost over my ears, you know, walking down. We were on a military high school and a college campus. We drank in high school like most people drink in college. We had fraternities. We copied our parents. It was like playing house. We stole booze from our parents. There were parents' cocktail parties, hiring bartenders. I mean, it was easy to steal booze, and we did it, and we loved it. It was, I loved everything about it. I was an insecure kid trying to get people's attention, trying to fit in, and booze made that all possible. When I found alcohol, it was like the magic elixir that Sandy talks about. Five of us that were close in high school, four are in Alcoholics Anonymous and one's in Al-Anon. And I was sitting in the tub last night thinking, there's two guys you didn't mention. One of them just died of alcoholism 3 months ago. He was more a marginal member. And the other one we were very close to in grade school, and he's got brain damage, living in a veteran's home, drank himself into that condition. So, you know, for a relatively small high school, we did a lot of drinking. I got in trouble. I thought I got in trouble because of I was underage. I thought between my father and the cops and all that sort of stuff, car accidents, I made the false IDs. I was the guy who tried to keep the party going. And I was thinking, you know, you start to know you're in trouble when you start to lie about your drinking. You know, you go from bragging to lying. And I did that pretty early in the process. It was clear to me that early in the process, I drank differently than my friends. I had a chance to go away to school, thought that would straighten things out. I went away to school. It didn't straighten them out. I drank my way out of the University of Notre Dame in the middle of my senior year. I was the class drunk. And that was important to me. I know when I hear Sandy talk about Yale, Going to Notre Dame was a big deal. I went down with 14 kids from my high school class. I had the best test marks of any of the kids. I was the only one who didn't finish. I interview well, I just don't perform. I don't know. And you know they don't give prizes for interviewing. I don't know why that is, Tom, if they, you know, they think they would. And I was in civil engineering, carrying 25 credits a semester, going to school one day a week. Bad combination. Tough to bluff your way through a thermodynamics exam. And Dave, you should be sitting with your wife, not that beautiful woman next to you. I had three guys petition to have me removed from engineering school. When I walked out of school in the middle of my senior year, I had to get a medical release. I lost my commission in the Army. I had to get a medical release for alcoholism. I was diagnosed an alcoholic when I was 19. That just seems silly to me. It is, but once or twice a year, I would be in a serious car accident. I had someone shoot at me and throw me out of a building one time. There were one or two things that would happen to me per year that looked like I was self-destructive, and they had me going to a psychiatrist early. He diagnosed me an alcoholic, interesting guy. I didn't buy it. I walked out of Notre Dame, got me out of the Army. I came home. I finished school at a local university. When I finished school, my dad asked me to leave home. The message overall was, we love you, we just don't like you. And got a job at a liquor store. It's important to use your gifts. And I'm the delivery guy. I'm stealing booze. I'm throwing cardboard boxes out the back door with a bottle in every third box, you know, and stealing alcohol. Had that job 6 months, got in trouble, lost it. Got a job as a waiter living on close to Skid Row. $10 night rooms. I'm shacked up with waiters and waitresses, people I live with. You know Dr. Seuss, that child author? Those are actual photographs of people I live with during the last year of my drinking. I work there, you know, drink, have a couple of drinks, go to work, 11 o'clock, work from 11 to 1, 1 to 5, I go drink beer in a bar, 5, I go buy a pint, and I just do that over and over and over again. No one knows where I am, that's fine with me. I'm waiting to see what the service is going to do with me. Vietnam's on, and they finally lost my file, had me take the physical. I got accepted to OCS, and then they lost my file. I had to take the physical again. They failed me the fourth time I took the physical. They failed me for a hearing deficiency, and I got out of that. And when I lost that job, I went to a party. I got my face kicked in. I looked terrible. They fired me. I had no place to go. I asked my parents if I could move back in the house. They allowed me back in the house. They asked me not to drink. I promised I wouldn't drink. I was unable to keep that promise. I didn't know you could get in trouble not drinking. I've been drinking close to a fifth a day for most days of the year, and then I tried to stop, and I started to go through withdrawal. When I moved back in the house, I tried to really, really tried to alter my life. I was tired of being the family jerk. I got back together with Linda, who is at the wedding, and we had gone together for, I don't know, we've been together so long, we can't remember how long we were together before we broke up, but we were together for about a year and a half, broke up for almost a year, got back together, got engaged, remarried. Today she is my very lovely wife, 45 years. In 3 weeks, she'll have 45 years in Al-Anon. And she's just been a great, I have been a constant source of growth for her. And I don't think she'd have the program, frankly, that she has today if it wasn't for me. So I would like to get some credit for that. Even though she's got to work on the resentment about being at the wedding. And I got a job executive training at a manufacturing concern, bought my first car. I thought it's really going to happen. I'm finally going to be a grown-up. I can't shut my drinking down. I can't. You know, we've all been there. It's going to be different. This time it's, you know, I use up my sick leave in the first, you know, 4 months at work. I'm falling asleep at my desk. I'm the company drunk. I'm in a company of engineers. I stand out like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I am as ill-positioned as I was in civil engineering at school. And I quit the job. When I went back to make amends to that employer and offer to pay back part of my salary, he also said, "You interviewed so well." I said, "Yep, I do. I do. I interview well. It's If you ever need someone who interviews well, I'm like to sign on. And I quit that job. I got a sales job. I'm drinking my way through the early part of the sales job. I'm there 2 or 3 months. A buddy of mine gets married. We go out in a 4-day drunk. I wake up a Thursday. I haven't been to work in 2 or 3 days. I don't know if I have a job, a fiance, or a place to live until I'm married. And all of a sudden, that was my moment of truth. I'm hugging the toilet in my, boxer shorts. Thursday, 10:30 in the morning. Not been at work. Not called in. And dry heaving, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. Two men, they arranged for two men to come see me at a cafe. I went to this cafe at 5:30 at night. Two men, one guy was 6 months, one guy was 6 years, sat down in a booth, said, "We're from AA, we had a drinking problem, we found an answer for it, we want to share it with you, we hope it helps you. If it doesn't help you, don't worry about it." For some reason, it helps us talking to guys like you. And they told me their story. Now, when you're young and in trouble, your family puts you in front of all sorts of people for help. Doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, psychologists, nuns, priests, bishops, judges. I have been in front of a lot of help. I had never, up till that time, talked to another person who had a drinking problem. These two men, in a matter of 45 minutes, gained an understanding and a confidence in me that my psychiatrist certainly was unable to elicit from me. I was just careful. I was always being tested. I was always being questioned. I mean, the primary method of anybody who was helping me before was questions. You know, in AA, when you finally get to people who understand you, they don't ask you questions. I mean, they may ask, why did you park the car in the living room? I mean, when you're around a group of people who have all done something like that, we don't ask that because we know it's an unanswerable question. And they shared their life with me, and I found myself sharing things with them that I had not shared with anybody else. That night, I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a great experience. I met my sponsor at that meeting. I lost my sponsor a year ago. My sponsor was 57 years, so we had 100 years between us when my sponsor died. He was a mailman. He was a powerful, ordinary man. If you think you got to be special to make a difference in life, I mean, and he was special, but you would not have thought him special. But if you were giving awards for saving lives, he saved a couple hundred lives, minimum. He just was the 12-step champion of the Uptown group of Alcoholics Anonymous. He wasn't fancy. He just brought you to meetings, helped you in a less fancy way to go through the steps than we do today. And I don't know. He was the guy, and I was his wingman. His name was Warren McGinley, and his wife was my wife's sponsor. And in 45 years of being together, we never called their house and asked to come over that they didn't say, "Come ahead." Ever. Kids, no kids, fighting, alone, together, never. My sponsor sat me down. I drank twice after walking in AA, once on a business trip to the West Coast with 30 days of sobriety, came back, got 90 days of sobriety. We went on our honeymoon. We honeymooned in Mexico. I drank in Mexico, dove off those cliffs where the cliff divers die. Easily could have killed myself. Didn't know whether I was going to jump or dive. If I would have jumped, I would have killed myself. That's how stupid that was. Later, my wife gave me a picture of the chasm at La Quebrada on our 10th anniversary. We were watching the divers, and I said, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever done." And she said, "It's not even in the top 10. So, I don't know how you share a life and see it so differently, but it's okay. My sponsor sat me down in a chair, and he said, I was in AA about a month. And he said, "Bob, alcoholism is a disease." I did not know that. I don't know what I thought it was. A condition? I don't know. A label? I didn't know what it was. It's a disease. Physical, mental, spiritual. Once you cross the line from problem drinking to alcoholism, your alcoholism affects you all the time. When you are drinking and when you are not drinking. The idea that my disease could affect, first of all, that it's a disease, then it could affect me when I was not actively drinking, was a very new idea. He said, we do an Alcoholics Anonymous. Once we take our last drink or drug, we use the 12 steps to change to find a different way to live that's sufficiently better than the way we lived before. If you don't change, you will not stay. Have you ever quit? I said, yeah. He said, did it work? I said, no. He said, didn't work for me either. We use the word sobriety, not abstinence. Sobriety gives you the impression that you got the steps in your life, you're going to AA, you got a sponsor, you're doing the deal. And that's a lot different than not drinking. We do not drink. We try to find a way to live so that you don't have to go back to drinking. We all know how to quit. We don't know how to stay quit. That was the Gettysburg Address of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can remember the chair I was sitting in 45 years ago when that man gave me that conversation. When I came back on the airplane, had my last drink, coming back from Mexico, turned myself in. It is. Did not want to make that call. Linda said, for God's sakes, call Warren. She has said that many times in her marriage. So I said, okay, I'll buy it. I'm an alcoholic. The first thing that happened to me is I built a wall around me that you couldn't, so I could hide the pieces of me that I didn't want you to see. The thinking that went on behind the wall said, you like me, but you only like what I let you see about me. You could see everything about me. You'd hate me. I hate me. Who knows more what a lousy, crummy, insufficient person I am than me. I'm walking around comparing my inside with your outsides. The only way you come out doing that, of course, is second best. But at some point in time, I got sick enough, afraid enough, tired enough. I started to tear the wall down when I called Alcoholics Anonymous, continued it in conversation with my sponsor, and tore it all the way down when I took my first fifth step and I made a discovery. The discovery was, is I'm not unique. Most of us come in here with a way over-exaggerated sense of uniqueness. If that doesn't diminish, we'll look for the differences rather than the similarities. I found out I'm not unique. My personality may be unique, but not my illness, not my behavior, not my feelings, not my experience. And I started to have a sense of hope that what worked in your life could work in mine. It was astounding to me as a 23-year-old to walk into a room of 50-year-old men, two women, Rose and Helen. And we had two women on Wednesday night and two women on Thursday night. And those men shared their illness with me in exactly the same kind of language that I would have used to describe my illness. And it was astounding to me that these grown-ups, these guys, and I had the same problem. And that some of them had gone further into the process, but they told me, they said, look, kid, it's like a movie. I mean, once you're in the movie, you're in it. It's like a garbage truck. It's going all the way to the dump. You can get off it anytime you want to. You don't have to ride it all the way to the dump. And, it was a hell of a deal. I came in, so when you hear young people talk, you hear a lot about potential. Everybody talked to me about my potential, I was a pretty well-equipped kid. I just didn't perform very well. And it was as mysterious to me as it was to my parents, as it was to my brothers and sisters, why I was such a screw-up when I looked like I was really going to do well. What I wanted more than anything else was to find someone who was so wise that they could look through me, that they could see into my inner, into my soul, and explain to me why I'm alcoholic and why my life has been so problematic. And I never found that. What happened to me is I took the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous and I surrendered. And when I took the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous and I surrendered, I was surrounded by teachers. I became an alcoholic. I was surrounded by all sorts of people who knew a heck of a lot about the disease of alcoholism and the solution for the disease of alcoholism. And they didn't talk to Bob about Bob. They talked to me about my alcoholism and gave me the best chance I have ever had in my life to put my life together. And I'm really glad I didn't get too focused on Bob as an individual. And I'm really glad that I got Alcoholics Anonymous, found a group of people who understood the problem and understood the solution and shared it with me in such an attractive way that I wanted to stay with them and investigate that solution. I had a bunch of other ordinary, horrible defects of character that were causing my... I couldn't get up in the morning. I later found out that had something to do with when I went to bed, but I did not know that at the time that I was doing that. And I had money. I spent $200 or $300 more a month than I made in 1967. And if you do that over a long period of time, you end up in debt. Just want to report that to you in case you're running that one. We started to have children. I had a truly extraordinary mother and father. Not perfect, but truly extraordinary. And my father was my hero, still is to this day. If I could be the man my father was, that would give me no end of pleasure. But they made a few mistakes. I wasn't going to make the few mistakes they made. I didn't. I made all the mistakes they made and some they never thought of. I was loud, impatient, angry, and sometimes violent with my children. I'm not proud of that, but that's what I was. I had a gambling problem, more of a hobby. Well, it wasn't that bad. I mean, 4 or 5 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week. It wasn't that. But I was making $5 to $10 grand a year playing backgammon. It was kind of like a second job. And I had some issues with work. I had some issues getting to work, getting up. I had some issues staying at work, and I had some problem working at work. Other than that, I was a pretty good worker. And I had all these problems in my first year of sobriety and my first inventory. None of the things I just shared with you made my first inventory. My first inventory was a recitation of the worst things I'd done in my life, the things I felt guiltiest about. And I was given a book, and I was told to read it, and I read some of the inventory guides from different places. You do what you do. You do what you're able to do. It's like a first-grade art project. It's not going to look like a sixth-grade art project. It is, you know, when you sometimes do your first one, it isn't going to be the piece of work that the second or third one is. And I found myself in sobriety, so I didn't have a very good list of my defects of character through my first year. I was on a honeymoon for most of my first year. When I got into my second year, I started to get in touch with my defects of character. I had a damn good list at the end of my second year. And one by one, I would take these things on, and I would try to improve them, and I didn't make much progress improving these defects of character. They bothered me during my third and fourth year. They ate my lunch in my fifth and sixth year, and I found myself in my seventh year of Alcoholics Anonymous in trouble. I found myself in my seventh year of Alcoholics Anonymous in as much trouble as I thought I was when I walked in the front door of AA. I had paid all my debts off, and I'm back in debt as much as I was when I walked in the front door of AA. I still haven't learned how to work. I'm still inappropriate with my children. You know, I'm still spending too much money, and I'm gambling. And when I started to have these problems that I didn't think a guy 2 years sober should have, I started to build my wall back up. Thank you very much for helping my drinking problem, but stay out of my gambling. Stay out of my sex life. Stay out of my work. Stay out of my parenting. Stay out of my marriage. And brick by brick, sober, going to 5 or 6 meetings a week, I built the damn wall back up. And people are telling me what a good job I'm doing. I mean, I'm sponsoring people, I'm giving talks, I'm doing 12-step work, I'm active, and I'm doing all the stuff. I got all the merit badges that a young man should get in AA. And they're patting me on the head, telling me what a good job. I'm saying, can't you see? I am dying. And I wasn't dying in my second and third year, but I'll tell you, by my sixth or seventh year, I felt like a fraud. I felt like I have all my life. You know, my mother always said, Bob, you're not very bright, dress well. And I have always tried to... I've always tried to do that. And that's kind of what I felt like in AA, that I've got, you know, this is the story of my life. I start well, I just don't finish. And here I am with 6 or 7 years of sobriety, and I'm back in serious trouble. I'm not thinking about drinking, but I'm thinking about killing myself. 7 years sober, 5 meetings a week, sponsored, doing steps. And I'm stuck. And why am I stuck? Well, by this time, the thing that have saved my bacon in AA is old timers, and I can't keep my mouth shut. I'm telling my sponsor 65% of what's going on. Now, I know in Florida you do 100%. I think that's really terrific. I was only telling myself 65%. 65% was all, you don't see it when you're in it. Life is lived forward but understood backward. And I didn't get it. You don't get it when you're in it. And the other thing is I had all these great examples. I loved the old-timers. And I knew I had to find out what God had to do with Wednesday. The problem is, go knock on the door, and God says, who's there? He said, God, it's Bob. God says, what do you want? I said, well, I'm 7 years sober, my pants are on fire. I need help. Will you help? God says, sure. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what God's going to want me to do. Okay? Get up in the morning. Go to work. Work at work. Stop gambling. Be kind and loving to your children. Be kind and loving to your wife. Get on a budget. I think that's an Al-Anon term. It's not in the book. It's a. I'm going to say, look, if I could do all those things, why the hell would I need God? I mean, so if you know ahead of time what God's going to want you to do, and you try to do it, what the hell's the use of trying to develop a relationship with the God of your understanding if you can't fulfill the conditions of the relationship? As soon as I get my act cleaned up, I'm going to go to God. Okay. As soon as I get most of it cleaned up, I could go to God. But I can't go to God with all six of the, on the list. And I was stuck in that place for 2 years. And finally, out of desperation, out of fear, I went back to the steps for the third time formally. First step, no-brainer. Powerless and unmanageable, of course. I mean, obvious is heaven, is hell. The thing that blew my mind is I lost step two. I believed it for us, but not for me. I could have put my hand on a lie detector. I mean, I'd come to the club, and a new guy come in with a bushel basket full of manure, and he'd dump it and tell me about the wife and the IRS and the cops and the no work. And I'd say, hey, as bad as it is, you're in the right place. If you get in here, get in a book, get a sponsor, and just do the deal. You don't have to do the deal perfectly. Just do the deal. You're going to be okay. You see that guy over there 2 years ago? He was a mess, and today he's doing just great. You're going to be okay. Then I'd get in the car 11 o'clock at night, and I'd drive home, and I'd say, Bob, when are you going to be okay? You're 5 years sober. You just bought a $300 sport coat at a store you had a $400 bill at. When are you going to stop spending money you don't have to buy things you don't need to impress people you don't like? Cecil Corrigal. That's a direct quote from Cecil Corrigal, a wonderful man, and Tom Spencer. When are you going to learn how to work, Bob? When are you going to be kinder with the children? I didn't know. I'm busting my britches. It isn't like I don't care about how I live my life. I care. I just am not doing well. And it's the story of my life. I start well, I just don't do well. And I did a third step with my sponsor on my knees in his office. Never did that before. I listened to these California people, and I thought, what the hell, I'm going to try it. So I did it. A little awkward, but it worked out okay. No one died. And then I did my third four step, best one I think I've done, and I went to my sponsor, and I said, I'm going to do a fifth step, and when I'm done, be careful, because whatever you recommend to me, I'm going to do. I said, I feel like I'm dying of thirst lying next to a lake. I am so sick and tired of not being able or willing to do what I need to do that I could just spit. And I'm ready to do, I think, whatever is recommended to me. Took my fifth step. My sponsor, he wanted me to go to a psychologist. Interesting thing for a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, you've got a lot of issues about work, money, failure, and success. And I think if you would go to a psychologist that works with business people, I think you might get some insight. I really didn't want to go, because I thought that was like an admission my program wasn't working. Hello. So I went. So I got a recommendation, and I went to this thing. You know, he said, "Will you get your parents involved?" I said, "No." I said, "My parents have been over-involved. If you can't help me without getting my parents involved, please refer me to someone who can." "Will you get your wife involved?" I thought, "Oh, crap." Well, the conversations are always different when your wife's in the room. There's a whole different data pool available when your wife's in the room. I said, "Yeah, I'll do it." "Will you get your kids involved?" I said, "They're young. Will you get your kids involved?" I said, "Yeah, I got." So we started going once or twice a week. And about a month and a half into that, I'm explaining to this guy that I'm going broke. I might file bankruptcy. My business is going under. I'm busting my ass, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours a day. And you laugh. I know none of you out there have had this problem. It's a Minnesota problem. And I'm explaining to him that I'm going to lose everything I have. And he looks at me and he said, "Why are you so afraid of failing?" It was like he hit me in the eye. I wanted to hit him. My reaction, I literally wanted to hit him. And he really stunned me. And I said, "Look, I've lived in this town all my life. I'm in the real estate investment business. I'm about to go broke. I'm about to lose everything I have. They're going to put my name in the paper. I'm going to lose everything I have. Nod your head up and down if you understand that." And I said, "You know, it's different for you doctors. I mean, you doctors, you file bankruptcy. You just take your little sign, walk down the hall, pound it on another door, and within 6 months you're making $100,000. I'm going to lose everything I had." And he looked over at my wife and he said, "If Bob lost everything he had, would he lose you?" My wife said, "No, wouldn't lose me." Asked the kids, and the kids said, "No, wouldn't. If you can't lose, you can't play." So I'm the guy that when we're running the marathon, I got a great pair of shorts. I look and talk and act like a runner. I tell you, I won some race in Minnesota. When the race took off, you'd expect me to be in the top 10, and I'm up in the front for the first third of the race, and somewhere between a third and halfway through, I fall and hurt myself and pull out of the race. When the race is over, you're going to say, "Well, what happened to that guy from Minnesota? Hell of a runner. Won some race. He was doing really well." But if you would have followed me around in a helicopter for the preceding 5 years, you would have known within 50 feet about when I would have fallen down, because I don't finish anything. Really gets old. Throwing a hand grenade in the son of a bitch every 6 months is a bad pattern. I don't finish anything. And what I discovered that night in that room with that man was fear. I'd taken 3 fear inventory. You'd think I'd know about fear. Fear had to do with dogs, snakes, and tall buildings. And what I discovered is I'm afraid of being a husband. I'm afraid of being a father. I'm afraid of work. I'm afraid of failure. I'm afraid of success. I'm swimming in fear, and I don't know what the hell it is. And that night, you know, within a little bit, I went home. I had one of the worst days I had in AA. Got up late, went to work late, left early, got in a backgammon game, won $600, missed dinner, missed work, missed dinner, missed the AA meeting, came home, got in a fight with my wife and slapped one of the kids. One of those things you'd like to have videotaped and sent to the General Service Office. Or have your sponsor burst in the front door. And I said, "Gee, it happened again." And I said, "It happened again. Weren't you there?" I'm saying, "Well, yeah, I was there, but it's so habitual, it's like I'm in a blackout. It's like I don't even have to think about it. It's like it happens, and all of a sudden I realized that was a bunch of crap. That my life was the way it was because I designed it the way it was. I sounded like a guy who wanted to quit gambling. I wanted to gamble whenever the heck I wanted to gamble for as much money as I wanted to gamble and not have problems because of gambling. I wanted my wife's love and affection and children's love and affection without spending time with them. I wanted money without work. Not a very good combination. And that night I got down on my knees And out of fear, not so much of drinking, but just continuing to be a sober jerk, I was allowed to take the sixth and the seventh step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous at a depth that I had not taken. The sixth step said that we're entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character, not Bob. And the seventh step said we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I had spent 8 years trying to get rid of them. I do not have the power. I have the responsibility. But I am the pipe, not the well. It happens through me, not by me. A doctor doesn't heal. He creates an aseptic environment and creates an atmosphere in which healing can take place and God heals. A farmer doesn't grow. He plants the seed, creates a fertile environment, an atmosphere in which growth can take place and God grows, and we don't change. We create an atmosphere in which change can take place and God changes us, and I believe that's an atmosphere and attitude that's affected by the steps of being honest, open-minded, and being willing. And the attitude involved in the sixth and the seventh step of the program. That night, four of the major problems of my life went out of my life that night. Such is the power of this program and such is the power of the steps. Now, I'm a guy who makes a lot of promises I can't keep. You know, when I go on a diet, first thing I do is I go buy a pint of ice cream and a bag of cookies. Well, it's already been a bad day. I'm just going to finish out the day. I'll probably never have ice cream again. So I knew if I didn't put a structure of support into place, I was in trouble. I turned the checkbook over to my wife and went on an allowance. I did that for her. My wife still puts $100 out on the counter for me every Friday. I feel like I'm a kept man. I love it. It's, actually, this year it went to 140. And she manages all the, I give her my salary. There is money that she is not involved with, but for a period of 5 years, there was no money that she was not involved with. She and my wife is a money manager. Not all spouses are money managers. I started dating my wife. I dated my wife every Friday night for 35 years. I had her love and affection. It was everybody else's I was after. I had to learn to go back. We were talking about kids and bills when we would go out, which is not how we fell in love. So we had to go back and learn how to shack up and have fun and all that sort of stuff. Best thing I ever did. The other thing I sometimes forget to mention is because of what happened to my life when I had this second surrender, I was able, all of a sudden, the guy that didn't know how to work became a good worker, and the company that I was involved with started to be very successful. And my wife was able to quit work. My wife is a registered nurse. And part of her complaint was how active I was in Alcoholics Anonymous and the family wasn't getting my attention. And part of the blessing, even though I didn't get less active in AA, is that she stopped working and she was able to be in the home full time, which compensated. It didn't totally replace me. But if you were going to pick one of the two of us to be with the children more, you would pick my wife. She's just an extraordinary lady and was a gift to our children. I made an appointment with my sponsor about going to work and staying at work and what I do at work. And my life took off, my work life took off like I was in a rocket ship. I never again, from that night, from the end of, after 6 months, I never again made less than a month than I made in that year. For the next 35 years. Such, I believe, is the power of AA. My life has been really up and down. I made millions and millions of dollars for the next period of time. And I was the guy in the fancy suit and the fancy Mercedes coming to the meeting, thinking that God had blessed me for being such a wonderful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a pain in the ass I was. You know, there's problems with failure, there's problems with success. There's an arrogance that slipped into my life that it was invisible to me and I did not see. And then they changed the Tax Act in 1984. Between 1984 and 1991, I lost everything I had. And if any of you are out there praying to be a millionaire, include the idea of keeping it. Well, hell, if you're praying, you might as well. I mean, just round it off with that idea. It never occurs to us if we ever got it, we'd ever lose it. I will just report to you that And over a four-year period, I lost about $10 million. And we have three children. Today, they are 42 years old. 42, maybe 43, almost. I know their names, though. But don't ask me quickly. 42, 40, and 32. 32 yesterday, as a matter of fact, Daniel. 2 days ago, Daniel. They have 25, 20, and 13 years of sobriety. So for the next 10 years, I made a lot of money, and then they passed the Tax Act. My business went down. I lost everything I had, negotiated my way out of bankruptcy in 1992. 1992 was about when my son, Peter, came back from the middle boy. He just moved to Switzerland, took a job with the World Economic Forum. That little craphead came home from his second year of college, got arrested for drunken driving, totaled on an automobile, and ended up in detox. It was kind of his Christmas present to Linda and I. And he went to treatment, then went through a sober house. I go to the meeting at the sober house Friday night, big meeting, and I cry my way all the way through. They start the meeting, I start crying. I cry all the way through the meeting. See that guy over there? He's got 25 years. How'd you like to have what he has? I think he's got the clap. I don't know what. It was just... I had absolutely no idea. Losing the money was like tearing the skin off my body. It was not like changing my clothes. I'm telling you that it was one of the toughest things I'd ever been through. I asked a man to be my spiritual advisor, and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "Well, I have this man in my life, Bob White, who was our chamberlain, for those of us that didn't have as much of Chuck's time. I spent a fair amount of time with Chuck, but I spent a lot of time with Bob White, and he was really something." And I said, "Everybody loves Bob White." I said, "I compete with everybody I'm around. If you've got two of them, I want three. If your score is 75, I want 80. All I want is more." "What would you like? More?" I'm the guy that goes to a $10 all-you-can-eat dinner, and I want 20 bucks worth. It's just so nuts that it's just broken. And I said, "I want to get rid of that. I want to get rid of competing. I want to get rid of comparing. I want to be free of the stuff." And within 6 months, I started to lose everything I had. And I went back and I said, "We got to talk." I said, what I said is, I want to keep the stuff and be free of it. We laughed about that. I lost him. The last year and a half, I lost my sponsor and my spiritual advisor. That's a lot to lose. After 43 years as my sponsor and 30 years as my spiritual advisor, not a loss. Today I have Dick M. from Bellevue, Nebraska, who I talked to the last couple of days. And it's really been a treat being back on board with a sponsor. Because the last 10 years, my sponsor was more like my father. He was like, we were family. And it wasn't the traditional sponsor-sponsee relationship. I don't think God had the financial collapse to teach me a lesson, but I believe my lesson in the financial collapse was to learn who I was with money and to learn who I was without money. And I'll tell you, it was hell on wheels going through that. Came back, made it all back. And then the 2008 collapse, I damn near drove the bus off the cliff again. Again, I promised myself I would never have the difficulty that I had around the year in the early 90s, and I did it again. Old and dumb is a really crappy combination. If you could avoid one of those, I can be young and dumb. Smart and old, but old and dumb, bad, bad, bad combination. And so we had to bring someone in, replace me as president of the company. I remember when I volunteered to leave the company, I thought everybody would stand up and say, "Oh, God, don't," and no one said a word. It was, and I'm still involved, and I'm still an owner and part of this process, but it's been a really tough 2.5 years. And it's an interesting process. What I've learned is I have elements of greed, and I've done inventory on this stuff, and it's not pretty looking at 69 years old or whatever the hell, 68 years old, and doing an inventory of your faults at this age and the serious consequences of them isn't fun, but it's what we do. It is, if you're going to be around for a while and you still want it to be a real deal, not kind of a dead deal, you got to do the deal. And you got to take a look at some stuff that isn't as attractive and isn't as easy to look at as it was. And so there's some stuff. My business partner has been sober 49 years. We've been partners 42 years. We are like the odd couple. We are as different as any two men could be. And it's been a fascinating, interesting process. It's been tough for me to change from being president of a fairly large corporation to being mostly retired, to not have that identity, to not have something to kind of hang on to, has been a real shift for me, and harder than I would have expected. When I was in that role, even though I wasn't working 40 hours a week, even when I was reducing my hours, I still had that identity and role to grab onto, and now I don't. But I have the confidence that I think I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. If I'm not, I will try to change that. So I go in once in a while. I still have some significant responsibility. But I've been doing the last couple of years what I would expect you to do if your pants were on fire. I go to Mass twice a week. You don't have to go to Mass. If you're Jewish, I don't think you have to go to Mass twice a week. But I go to 5 to 6 AA meetings. I sponsor a boatload of guys, and I have a sponsor. I meditate a half hour in the morning, and I read 6 or 7 books, which is more than I ever have, but that's what I happen to do now. I don't think I'm a model. I don't think I'm an example. I'm just telling you what I do. And for the last 2 years, I've been doing that, not like I'm trying to earn the merit badges. I do that because I need to start my day and remind myself about who I am and what I am on a daily basis. To remind myself that I'm a child of God, that I'm involved in a program that is spiritual in nature, that has a set of principles that if I put them into my life, it promises me a life that allows me to be happy and usefully whole. And I believe that. I believe that more today than I have ever. I know that at the rock bottom. It's just extraordinary. I gave a talk at a treatment center last week, and I didn't do a very good job. And I was thinking on the way home, what the hell, what did you want to say that you didn't say? What I wanted to say is, you don't ever have to drink again. We got an answer for it. I mean, all you got to do is drop your defenses. I mean, we've got rooms full of people who have come to Alcoholics Anonymous and found a solution for the problem of alcoholism. If you have the problem of alcoholism, hallelujah, brother, you're in the problem solved, over, done. You need never take another drink. And if you are at the point with yourself that you really want that to be what you're sitting in your seat for, if you're not ready, that's not good news for you. But if you are ready, it's great news. And I was listening to Chuck Chamberlain the other day, and he talked about standing outside that first meeting when he went to, and the man came out and said, "Can I help you?" And he said, "Well, are you looking for something?" And he said, "If it would interest you, sir, I'm looking for sobriety." And he said, "Little did I know that I was going to be offered the whole deal. That I was going to be offered to learn how to live life." And Chuck said, "I never knew how to live life on life's terms. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a drinking problem. I did not understand the depth of the problem. I did not understand the spiritual and the mental aspects of the disease. And that's still going on for us guys and gals. That is not going away. That's why I'm still active going to meetings today, is to maintain my spiritual condition. When I'm in tune, life is better for me and for everybody around me. When I'm out of tune, it's not a pretty, sight." In order to do the deal on a fairly regular basis, I've got to do some inventorying and I've got to make some changes. And I'm afraid of change and I don't want change. The problems in my life are not new. The problems in your life are not new. They're not days old, they're not months old, they're years old. And some of those problems, we so identify with them, we feel like they're skin and bones. We feel like they're part of us. And to give them up, we'd have to die. And that is not true. It isn't who you are, it's what you do. You can change what you do and you can change what you have, and it doesn't change who you are. You can change from a Chevy to a Ford and you're still the same person. And you can change your behavior and it doesn't change who you be. And the problem of alcoholics, the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous is transformation as a result of a surrender to the greatest power of the universe. It is the reconnection with the God of our understanding. It is the empowerment, and then the power is added, as Bob White would say. Never had the power. I looked good, but I never had the power. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you had me do... It was like, you know that movie, Karate Kid? It was like wax on and wax off. I could not tell how the things you asked me to do related to the living of my life. And yet, as a result of doing the things that you recommended that I do, I've been able to live my life at a higher and more acceptable level than I've ever been able to do it before. And it's like running on empty. I am not doing it. Most of us who've been around a while, and if you're stuck, you know, we keep thinking, I'm going to go to this conference and I'm going to hear these guys talk, and I know that if I go hear this old-timer talk, he's really got something special, and I'm going to get it together. And I want to read my favorite paragraph and a half of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you think of what you need is a little bit more information, and you need to do it a little bit better, and then you'll be able to get it together. And on page 84 it says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. And if I'm working with a guy who's got a sex problem or money problem, I sometimes put that word in there. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We find that it has happened automatically. Does that sound like I'm doing it? We see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. And that is, it happens through us. We come in here and we do this work and the problem falls off. It falls off. It's not removed by the muscle, by the intellect, by a piece of information, by a technique. It's not removed by us. It's having had a spiritual awakening. And it's been removed because we're more awake. As a result of being awake, I don't strike children. My life is more in balance today than it has ever been. I'm in love with my wife, and I'm self-supporting in a much lower fashion than I wish I were. I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, not for a drinking problem that I had many years ago, but for being in the process of maintaining my spiritual condition today. And I am pleased as punch to be with you this weekend and my friend Sandy. Thank you very much.